all this will not be finished in the first 100 days, nor will it be finished in the first 1,000 days, nor in the life of this administration, nor even perhaps in our lifetime on this planet. But let us begin.
Let us continue. This is our challenge, not to hesitate, not to pause, not to turn about and linger over this evil moment, but to continue on our course so that we may fulfill the destiny that history has set for us.
Let us begin. Let us continue. These two phrases are permanently woven into the fabric of the past 3 years of American history. The words, "Let us begin," were uttered by the late President John F. Kennedy in his inaugural address on January 20, 1961. And the words, "Let us continue," came from the lips of the new President, Lyndon B. Johnson, as he spoke to the United States Congress on November 27, 1963. 5 days after he took the oath of office following the tragic assassination of his predecessor. In the recorded speeches of these two men, presidents and leaders of their country, can be found illumination of their beliefs and policies on issues of vital import to Americans and people the world over. The search for peace, aid for countries in need, the role of the United Nations, equal rights for all citizens, the defense of freedom. Listen now to their words. On April 4, 1961, President Kennedy spoke about his government's desire for peace and the defense of freedom in this fashion.
Now, our great responsibility is to be the chief defender of freedom in this time of maximum danger. Only the United States has the power and the resources and the determination. We have committed ourselves to the defense of dozens of countries stretched around the globe who look to us for independence, who look to us for the defense of their freedom. We are prepared to meet our obligations, but we can only defend the freedom of those who are determined to be free themselves. We can assist them. We will bear more than our share of the burden, but we can only help those who are ready to bear the share of the burden themselves.
President Johnson, speaking before the United Nations General Assembly on December 19, 1963, said,
"Any man and any nation that seeks peace and hates war and is willing to fight the good fight against hunger and disease and ignorance and misery will find the United States of America by their side, willing to walk with them every step of the way."
President Kennedy recognized the necessity for aid to the developing nations of the world. He had this to say in an address before the General Assembly of the United Nations on September 20th, 1963.
"Never before has man had such capacity to control his own environment, to end thirst and hunger, to conquer poverty and disease, to banish illiteracy and massive human misery. We have the power to make this the best generation of mankind in the history of the world, or to make it the last. The United States, since the close of the war, has sent over $100 billion worth of assistance to nations seeking economic viability. And 2 years ago this week, we formed a Peace Corps to help interested nations meet the demand for trained manpower. Other industrialized nations whose economies were rebuilt not so long ago with some help from us are now in turn recognizing their responsibility to the less developed nations.
We stand ready now, as we have in the past, to provide generously of our skills and our capital and our food to assist the peoples of the less developed nations to reach their goals in freedom, to help them before they are engulfed in crisis.
President Johnson made known his continued support of aid to the less privileged peoples of the world before this same General Assembly on December 19, 1963.
I have seen too much of misery and despair in Africa, in Asia, in Latin America. I have seen too often the ravages of hunger and tapeworm and tuberculosis and the scabs and the scars on too many children who have too little health and no hope. I think that you and I and our countries and this organization can and must do something about these conditions. I'm not speaking here of a new way of life to be imposed by any single nation. I am speaking of a higher standard of living to be inspired by these United Nations. In this effort, the United States will do its full share.
Both the late President Kennedy and President Johnson left no doubt as to their support of the United Nations.
The peacekeeping record of the United Nations has been a proud one, though its tasks are always formidable. We are fortunate to have the skills of our distinguished Secretary General and the brave efforts of those who have been serving the cause of peace in the Congo, in the Middle East, in Korea and Kashmir, in West New Guinea and Malaysia. But what the United Nations has done in the past is less important than the tasks for the future. We cannot take its peacekeeping machinery for granted. That machinery must be soundly financed, which it cannot be if some members are allowed to prevent it from meeting its obligations by failing to meet their own. The United Nations must be supported by all those who exercise their franchise here, and its operations must be back to the end. My fellow inhabitants of this planet, let us take our stand here in this assembly of nations, and let us see that if we, in our own time, can move the world to a just and lasting peace.
And more than ever, we support the United Nations as the best instrument yet devised to promote the peace of the world and to promote the well-being of mankind. We have seen too much success to become obsessed with failure. The peacekeeping machinery of the United Nations has worked in the Congo, in the Middle East, and elsewhere. The great transition from colonial rule to independence has been largely accomplished. The decade of development has successfully begun. The world's arms race has been slowed. The struggle for human rights has been gaining new force, and a start has been made in furthering mankind's common interest in outer space, in scientific exploration, in communications, in weather forecasting, in banning the stationing of nuclear weapons, and in establishing principles of law. I know that vast problems remain, but men and nations working apart created these problems, and men and nations working together must solve them.
President Kennedy's administration committed itself to the proposition that all men are created equal and pressed forward vigorously to guarantee equal rights for all Americans. Here are his words from his State of the Union message on January 11, 1962.
But America stands for progress in human rights as well as economic affairs. And a strong America requires the assurance of full and equal rights to all its citizens of any race or of any color. This administration has shown, as never before, how much could be done through the full use of executive powers, through the enforcement of laws already passed by the Congress, through persuasion, negotiation, litigation, to secure the constitutional rights of all, the right to vote, the right to travel without hindrance across state lines, and the right to free public education. I issued last March a comprehensive order to guarantee the right to equal employment opportunity in all federal agencies and contractors. The Vice President's committee thus created has done much, including the voluntary plans for progress, which in all sections of the country are achieving a quiet but striking success in opening up to all races new professional, supervisory, and other job opportunities. But there is much more to be done by the executive, by the courts, and by the Congress. Among the bills now pending before you, on which the executive departments will comment in detail, are appropriate methods of strengthening these basic rights, which have our full support. The right to vote, for example, should no longer be denied through such arbitrary devices on a local level, sometimes abused, as literary tests and as poll taxes. As we approach the 100th anniversary next January of the Emancipation Proclamation, let the acts of every branch of the government and every citizen portray that righteousness does exalt a nation.
And President Johnson's address to the United States Congress on the 27th of December, 1963, left no doubt as to his stand on this issue.
We have talked long enough in this country about equal rights. We have talked for 100 years or more. It is time now to write the next chapter and to write it in the books of law. I urge you again, as I did in 1957, and again in 1960, to enact a civil rights law so that we can move forward to eliminate from this nation every trace of discrimination and oppression that is based upon race or color.
The words of President Johnson make it clear that he will continue in the liberal and vigorous tradition of his predecessor.
Peace is a journey of 1,000 miles, and it must be taken one step at a time. We know what we want. The United States of America wants to see the Cold War end. We want to see it end once and for all. The United States wants to prevent the dissemination of nuclear weapons to nations not now possessing them. The United States wants to press on with arms control and reduction. The United States wants to cooperate with all the members of this organization to conquer everywhere the ancient enemies of mankind, hunger and disease and ignorance, to the protection and the enlargement of this new hope for peace, I pledge my country and its government.
You have heard the words of President Lyndon B. Johnson and the late President John F. Kennedy. Their policies, their beliefs, on issues of major concern to all citizens of the world. Said the one, "Let us begin." And in the living words of the other, let us continue.